Case number 212868, Bachman Sunny Hill Fruit Farms versus Producers Agriculture Insurance Company. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Gonzato for the appellant.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mark Gonzato on behalf of the petitioner appellant. I have reserved 3 minutes.
Very well.
This is a case that arises out of the unique area of federally subsidized, federally controlled crop insurance.
It doesn't seem that unique to me, Mr. Gonzato.
It's a very different kettle of
fish. We have to stop meeting.
That's the way I would put this.
Yeah.
But this case, as most of these cases, if they don't settle through mediation, has to go to arbitration. The only thing we need to know about the arbitration was that the key question in that arbitration was whether two loss adjustment manuals were incorporated into the party's contract. The arbitrator said no, and on that basis decided against my client. It was only after that that my client took the issue to the FCIC to get an agency determination of whether that determination was in fact correct. It was in August of 2020. The arbitration was in March. In August of 2020, the FCIC issued its final agency determination, deciding that the arbitrator was incorrect in his determination with respect to the manuals.
There was no nullification of the award at that point, correct?
Yes. It's interesting.
Why didn't they? I mean, isn't that the job of the NCIC to nullify the award?
Yes. The argument that my opponent has made seems to suggest that in itself was the nullification of the arbitration award automatically, if I'm reading their argument correctly. Now, what my clients did instead is they went to court, obviously.
And the reg seems to suggest it's self-executing, doesn't it? The reg says it shall be nullified or whatever.
Yes.
I don't know what to make of it, but it suggests that it's in some way self-executing, that it's kind of null and void. Then you would, at that point, wouldn't you go to court to confirm that nullification or vacate that nullification or whatever it would be?
I don't know. I mean, it does appear from the regulations, you are correct. The FCIC's determination is, in fact, an automatic nullification. It operates as such. What my clients did, whether it's belts and suspenders, I don't know how you want to put it, they went to federal court and they moved to nullify. And it was that argument that the trial court rejected on the basis, largely on the basis of timing, found that the...
I'm just wondering if we find that there's not really court, you were too late getting to court to affirm the nullification, could you still go back to the NCIC and ask them to nullify it and then go back to your arbitrator?
Well, respondent has taken the position that only the FCIC can do that. I have to say that is not what the federal district court in the Miller case, the case that's published in Federal Supplement, because that was all about nullification. And if you read the regulations with respect to nullification, it just says it should be nullified. It doesn't say that a court can't do it. And the court in Miller, the federal district court in Miller, definitely did it.
In Miller, if I recall, as a formalistic matter, it was brought under the FAA and styled as a motion to vacate nullify, wasn't it?
That is not correct. Your opinion that you joined in Miller did in fact say that this was governed by the FAA and by Section 10A4 of the FAA in terms of arbitrator overreach, whatever you want to call it. But in the original Miller case, and that's the one I think that's published at 366 F sub 3rd, in the original Miller case, that was in fact a motion to nullify, and the trial judge in that case did in fact nullify.
Yeah, no
question. It was the second round that was the case that you sat on. The second round, they went to the FCIC, got a final agency determination, went back to district court, and there were different arguments as to why.
But in the first, I understand all that. In the first proceeding where the judge nullified, he said nullified, that's okay, correct. Was the original petition, did the original petition or complaint in federal court invoke or mention the FAA, or was it just styled as a motion to nullify?
That's a good question, because the FAA probably was cited because the original petition in the Miller case was filed by the winning insurance company. It was the losing farmer in the Miller case who did in fact counter petition for nullification. So I guess in one sense there's no question that the FAA was cited by the insurance company that brought the Miller case.
But was the
farmer involved who definitely sought nullification under the common crop insurance policy.
In the district court?
In the district court.
Correct to do so, but it is, yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean necessarily that the district court is the correct place to seek nullification.
Yes.
But I guess that's, they were there and they, you know, they asked.
Right.
And the farmer in the Miller case had filed that counter petition to nullify within the 3-month period of the FAA.
No, it was right? not within
it
the
was three after months. The 3 months.
No, definitely not. Okay. And
it
understand.
Was just within the year since the insurance company had brought the action to confirm within the year.
Yeah,
I don't recall. The farmer would
yeah, they had a year. You're
counter
right.
Yeah. Because it would have been brought by the insurance company.
So I've argued two issues in this case. One is the question of whether the FAA even applies, and that is, in fact, I'll rely on my brief on that. That's totally based on what the FCIC has determined on its own and in that agency colloquy, if you will, with the public commentary. They've suggested that the FAA does not even apply where a nullification is sought. The second issue that's in the case that the trial court in this case decided on is a kind of an interesting question of timing. Obviously, if there is an automatic nullification, perhaps we don't even need to get into that. But there is a conflict here. And I believe you are the first court at the appellate level to consider this.
How do you reconcile the two, that you have to bring the action to vacate an award within 3 months of the FAA, and if you want to pursue the nullification remedy, you file something with the FCIC, and you just ask the district court to stay or abate the action while you're waiting for the FCIC's ruling.
Well, it could happen that.
There's no conflict.
But that doesn't change
the FAA, haven't you?
That does not change the policy language. The policy language in this case says you may seek either side, and that's where the trial court got this wrong.
But you have a federal statute that confines the judicial power as applied to the vacatur, et cetera, of arbitration awards. Confines it to very limited circumstances.
Well, I don't know if it's judicial power necessarily.
I'm sorry. No, it's okay. I mean, like, we start with Marbury, all right, the judicial power. There is this power. Congress can strip us with jurisdiction, et cetera, sometimes. In the FAA, I'm suggesting Congress has said the judicial power can be exercised to vacate or set aside an arbitration award only for these specific reasons.
Yes.
And if parties have a contract that purports to empower courts to set aside an award for additional reasons, who cares?
That's correct.
Because, I mean, I'm suggesting that language would be ineffective.
And that obviously is the first argument I've made here with respect to how these two things should be harmonized. And that is, the whole idea of the FAA was to defeat the antipathy, if you will, towards arbitration contracts. And the way they did so was by saying, we're going to enforce arbitration contracts as they are written. And that is, in fact, what we're asking for in this case.
Okay, but you still have the provision in the FAA that confines the court's power to set aside arbitration awards after the ARB's over and done with.
But there's a difference, it seems to me, between the timing to do so and the authority to do so. Because obviously, if we got around to pleading this case as an FAA case, something I admit my predecessor didn't do, the fact is it would be under 10A4. And in fact, Miller said exactly that. That the, your decision in Miller said exactly that. This is clearly a 10A4 argument. That is the arbitrator exceeding his authority.
Right. No, I get that, but.
But in timing, it's...
Let me get my question out. So how do you overcome then the provision of the FAA that says you've got to do this in 3 months?
Because for a number of reasons that I've discussed, and that is you're enforcing the contract.
It doesn't say unless the parties provide otherwise. Congress said...
But does it have to? Does it have to?
Well,
the fact is, we are enforcing an arbitration agreement when you extend the time. The other thing
we enforce statutes, you know? I mean, and frankly, in the case of a conflict between a statute enacted pursuant to, you know, bicameralism and presentment on the one hand and a party's agreement on the other, the statute prevails.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. Okay,
and that is, unless the statute provides an out for that kind of circumstance.
Well, I've cited to you the Supreme Court's decision in which they specifically state that a statute of limitations, and by the way, and this is another thing that I question the concept of judicial authority, this has been identified. Section 12 of the FAA has been identified by this court in the Occidental case as a statute of limitations.
Okay,
and the United States Supreme Court, in the case I've cited, says that you can, in fact, contract out statute of limitations, and that's precisely what's involved. Pardon me?
Was that an FAA case? No. Or, I mean, are they talking about like a tort, you know, statute of limitations?
No, it was not an FAA case. You're
correct.
Was
it a statutory statute of limitations, do you recall, that... This Occidental case says, oh, yeah, sure, extend it out beyond...
Oh, Occidental is definitely an FAA case because it says specifically it's 1988 case from this court.
What do we do... let's assume it's a statute of limitations. What do we do with the old, I guess, maybe common law rule or other rule that you can't really contract ex ante to extend a statute of limitations? The parties can agree to shorten a statute of limitations... They can't agree to extend the statute of limitations.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true under the Supreme Court case that I've cited. But there is another thing that's involved here, I think, that has to be taken into account. Because in terms of applying the common crop policy's one-year provision for judicial review, and that is the common crop policy specifically allows for an additional layer of review of arbitration decisions, precisely what this case demonstrates. And that is, even after an arbitrator announces a ruling, if that arbitration decision does in fact involve contractual interpretation, then the parties are compelled, not just might, they're compelled to go seek FCIC determination of whether that policy determination is correct. So we have not only... And by the way, as I pointed out, the regulations require...
But then you would get another ruling, right? So either it's another award and you could go, the FAA timing would start again, or it's final agency action that you could get reviewed under the APA, right?
Yes.
Like you get this second layer. So why isn't, if you nullify the award or the award is out, then you can go confirm or vacate that under the FAA, or if it's an interpretation, it doesn't result in anything having to do with the award, can't you get APA review?
I can tell you that I'm going to report back to the person who hired me in this case and tell him he should be going back to the FCIC because this board was nullified automatically a few years ago. But I guess it still presents the question of whether the policy that gives my clients 1 year to seek judicial review or the FAA's 3-month period applies. I'm sorry.
Okay, you're all right. You'll have your rebuttal.
Thank you.
And we'll hear from Ms. DiLorenzo.
Good morning, Your Honors. Josephine DiLorenzo on behalf of Respondent Producers Agriculture Insurance Company. Our position is pretty straightforward, that the Arbitration Act provides the exclusive remedy for judicial review of arbitration awards issued pursuant to the common policy. So I don't think I need to repeat everything that's in my brief, but the bottom line is that Bachman's petition for nullification doesn't reference the Arbitration Act or any of its grounds for relief. So
why can the parties contract around the 3-month rule?
I
mean, there are plenty of circuit court cases that say that the FAA timing requirements look like our statutes of limitations, not kind of jurisdictional appellate review provisions. So if it's a statute of limitations, you can contract around it, right?
That is the rule. We did argue that it was jurisdictional. We relied on the reasoning, and I believe it was a Nebraska Supreme Court case.
What was jurisdictional?
That the time period in the FAA is
That's a tough argument to make under the Supreme Court's case law these days.
Yes, the Supreme Court would control. My only other support, which is somewhat indirect, is a case that we cited. It's an 11th Circuit case.
But go ahead and answer his question. I don't want to derail.
Oh, I'm sorry. We made the argument that it's jurisdictional, but yes, I agree that if you find that it's not jurisdictional, then they can contract around it.
Really? What about the primacy of, a congressional statute in terms of providing the legal rule that we must apply? Parties can't just contract away statutes as a general matter.
That's what I was going to say. The 11th Circuit case that we cited, and we cited it for a different proposition, so this is somewhat indirect, but it's Campbell Scolage versus Federal Crop Insurance Corporation, a 2014 case. And they emphasized that even though the common policy is codified, it is still a contract. And so they found that it couldn't get around the Arbitration Act, but they were construing
what provision of the act were they talking about?
It was a different one. It was Section 20C that says, notwithstanding any provision in the rules of the American Arbitration Association, you and we have the right to judicial review of any decision rendered in arbitration. So they were arguing for a broader interpretation based on that, and the 11th Circuit said, no, this is you can't get around that. It's a contract despite it being codified. So I would rely on that for being the same outcome here.
What was the name of that case again?
It's in my brief, but like I said, I cited it for something different. It's Campbell's Foliage versus Federal Crop Insurance, 562 Fed Appendix 828. And it's a 2014 case.
Okay.
So I would rely on that on why the statute should still control here. And then as far as the automatic nullification, I mean, it plainly says that in the regulation. And I think it's in the.
So how does that work when you say automatic nullification by the FCIC? Then you just what? You get a new award at that point? Or how does it work? Do you have to go back to court at that point?
I don't believe so, and I don't have this in my outline or my brief, but I believe that it was in the lengthy citation to the public comments that's in Bachman's brief, and somewhere in the FCIC was addressing one of the public comments, and they just said, well, this isn't prejudicial, it just resets it. So that says to me that it's automatically nullified, and yes, you go back to arbitration.
Okay.
And I would also say there's also an appeal procedure through the FCIC. So that says to me that you take care of it through the FCIC and that you're not.
Okay, so theoretically they might get some favorable ruling from the NCIC and get it nullified that way. You've submitted this supplemental authority, though, indicating what the NCIC is not, or FCIC is not, taking the position that Bachman is advocating here?
Correct. That's what I was going to end on that, because they did change their mind. They changed their mind again.
Why does it even matter? I mean, this reg is agnostic about the answer. It just says, hey, if it involves a policy interpretation, you have to go to the FCIC. It doesn't depend on the answer. And the nullification doesn't depend on the answer. It's just, hey, if you should have sought an opinion from the FCIC and you didn't, then automatically nullified.
Oh, correct. He was asking me about...
I just wanted to understand the background of what...
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hijack your question.
No, I understand.
You can respond to his and then maybe quickly to what I said.
Okay. At the end of the day, in our case, they changed their minds again. So their whole issue that they're raising... it gets more into the substance of the case, but
the point is that there's an administrative way to deal with this nullification.
Yes.
Even if you don't have a remedy in court under the FAA, in this instance, if they actually have a meritorious case, they can go to the FCIC and get it dealt with that way. even if we say we have no jurisdiction.
That's how I understand the regulations. What they, yes, it was nullified, so I suppose it should have started over again, I guess, with a new arbitration.
But is that FAD, whatever that is that final agency action that's subject to review under the APA? It says nothing about the actual award or arbitration award. It just says these two things are not part of the, these handbooks are not part of the contract.
Correct.
Final agency action?
There was an appellate procedure, I believe, through the FCIC, which I don't think they pursued, so that's why we...
But that would be one avenue if
correct.
You disagreed with that?
Yes. They had a remedy.
If an award is nullified or should have been nullified because somebody, the arbitrator, didn't seek an interpretation from the FCIC when he or she should have, would that be a grounds for vacating an award under Section 10 of the FAA because you exceeded your power or whatever the criteria are?
It would seem like it is, as long as it was in the 3-month time.
As long as you filed within some 90 days or whatever we would say it would be. Okay.
Although the regulations do make it sound like the review is supposed to happen by the FCIC, but I suppose you could go that route. I think that covers everything other than that. Even if, at this point, even if you were to decide that they did have a year to bring their motion to vacate or seek nullification, again, in this case, it's kind of a moot issue because there's a new final agency determination. So that's all I have, unless you have any other questions.
But that would still, we would still remand it, right? And it would be up to the district court to decide that?
I guess you could affirm for an alternate reason, although it's a new authority, so I'm not sure, maybe.
Right. No, I understand.
Okay. Thank you for your
argument. Thank you so much.
We'll hear a rebuttal.
I guess what I would like to stress is this is something beyond a simple contract between two people. This is a universal contract. It is a contract that governs every single...
Well, it's a contract because the agency directs it to go in the contract, correct?
Yes.
But the agency in its authorizing or enabling statute doesn't have anything from Congress saying that the statute of limitations should be a year. Is there anything there in that statute that enables the FCIC? Was it the FCIC that
required
this contract?
The FCIC, certainly, as I've indicated in the first part of my brief, believes that it is not subject to the FAA. That's their agency.
The point is, the only thing we have from Congress as far as statutes of limitation is in the FAA, right?
Yes.
There's nothing that this one-year statute of limitations came from an agency that didn't have any express authority from Congress to create a one-year statute of limitations, correct?
Well, there's no direction that I know
okay.
of, certainly.
So in essence, it is the equivalent of a private contract.
Well, yes, it is a private contract.
Albeit used universally, but it doesn't change the fact it's a private contract.
Yes. I can tell you that this is obviously the conflict here, because there is judicial review within 1 year. You are the first appellate court that I know of, two of you, are going to hear the same argument tomorrow because you have a case on your call tomorrow with the same issue presented, this conflict.
The difference tomorrow, I mean, or today you're saying, I think you've acknowledged that the FAA does govern this agreement and this in the context of this case, correct? The FAA governs this arbitration.
Well, my first point was that the agency has taken a different position. I acknowledged in my brief the Miller case, which definitely suggests, although I don't think it was the brief, suggests that the FAA does, in fact, apply to these contracts. So I did acknowledge that. That's in the Miller case itself.
In the other case, the Miller case.
But it was what was not briefed in the Miller case was this question of the agency's own determination that the FAA does not apply to these requests to nullify.
Okay.
Anything further? Thank you.
I guess not. Thank you very much. Thank you both for your arguments. The case will be submitted.